So you could see it from both sides. But additionally to demonizing them, the media, well, media institutions will often combine this with going the opposite direction by almost hypersexualizing them. So it can make a story seem more newsworthy than showcasing them as just extremely unfeminine. But hypersexualizing them could also be seen as adding to the unfeminine stereotype, because it's associating outwardly sexualized and promiscuous women as being viewed as like unnatural from historical patriarchal societal values that oppress women. As promiscuous women were the outcasts of society from historically. So when you are associating hypersexualization to female violent offenders, it's strengthening the traditional norms and gender values of a submissive caregiver to correlate to femininity, because it negatively is linking female sexuality and expression and sexualization to this demonizing monster of a woman. And it's often linked to lesbianism, because also it's considered unnatural from historical values for women to be engaging in sex or in a relationship with another woman. And there is a very key case with this called Amanda Knox. So Amanda Knox, she was wrongfully convicted, and she actually spent four years incarcerated for the murder of her British roommate and fellow exchange student. And many experts actually say that the kind of wrongful incarceration of her was due to negative media representation, how she wasn't actively engaging in female stereotypical traits on the stand, that it influenced the jury to convict her, even though a lot of legal experts say there was insufficient evidence in the trial to corroborate her involvement in it. She was still convicted, and the headlines were calling her cold and calculated and the Ice Maiden, reinforcing this label that she was extra bad because she was had this perception made of her being extremely unfeminine because she rarely showed any emotive response. She didn't have any tears. She showed no remorse, that are commonly associated with women being overly emotional. Now, this is very different to Eileen Wuornos, who, again, I discussed last week in part one, because she was considered to be way overly expressive and emotive during her trial. But then she was accused of face work, and then she was just categorized in the mad category. So, like, either you're showing too much emotion or you're not showing enough emotion, you're still getting categorized a certain way that's not really seen as feminine. And this is also, this bad kind of categorization is also reinforced dependent on the specific type of female violence. So you have what Eileen Wuornos was doing, which was killing male counterparts that she said allegedly raped and sexually assaulted her. But you also will have females who kill through infanticide and filicide. So infanticide is killing a child within a year of its birth, and filicide is killing your own child. And that is seen as, if there is a woman like that, they're often categorized as extra bad because it's so incredibly contradictory to the, quote, female duty of being a caregiver, being loving, nurturing, and protecting towards children. So there is a very clear example, which I have mentioned briefly, called the Lucy Letby case. She was a neonatal nurse in the UK. She had a very, what is classed as a very feminine job, because the sole responsibility of it is to be caring and protecting and nurturing to sick people, sick children, anyone. But she was convicted of murdering 7 babies and attempted to murder 6 others between 2016 to 2017, I believe. So she was convicted of infanticide, and she was targeting ill and premature babies because their deaths could easily be seen as natural since they were already ill or premature, so they have a lower survival rate as it is, which is why there were so many cases, because it wasn't completely obvious until they started to notice a pattern that she was always the nurse on the cases. So that is a clear example of, like, that is so polarizing to what society deems feminine, that the news was using typography called like cunning, wicked, sadistic. And those were further enforcing this notion that the media is categorically demonizing female violent offenders to make them as unfeminine as possible, to keep the gendered feminine stereotype working, to keep society in order that way. But what was quite interesting is that these headlines, because these are actual headlines from newspapers in the UK, there was also the term cowardly associated in there, which could be argued as actually diverting away from demonizing her, because I would say cowardly is associated with weak, and that is a trait that's commonly correlated with femininity. So it also is diverting away from this demonization of her. So there is like an argument on both sides, because they are using terminology that both agrees with this theory, but also disagrees with this theory. Well, the theory disagrees with it. But on the flip side of infanticide and filicide, if we're looking at the different types of female violence, they can also be, they're not just categorized as bad, because they can also be categorized as mad, which you see with the Andrea Yates case, where she killed her 5 children from postpartum depression because she was suffering from psychosis. And that's because of the role that like maternal mental health can play. And it's increasing in prevalence and awareness with postpartum depression. It can cause a number of psychotic symptoms, including delusions and anxiety and psychosis, which is what Andrea Yates was found to have, which was psychosis, which actually led to her drowning her children. So that's kind of the bad category. And like I said earlier, often if they're in the bad category, they'll be classed as doubly deviant, because they are not only breaking the law by killing either babies or men or just people, they are also severely breaking the they're severely breaching and breaking the gendered expectations and roles of women and femininity and things like that. So that is the bad categorization. Now, the sad categorization is kind of self-explanatory. It's usually the media is victimizing the violent offender by having the narrative focus on an event that might have happened previously to lead them to committing the violence. For example, abusive parents or previous sexual abuse. Or it can be interconnected to the mad category, because they sometimes hone in on the victimization of the perpetrator to their mental or medical illnesses, which is the postpartum depression leading to infanticide and filicide that I was just talking about. But with like the sad categorization, Eileen Wuornos, again, she is a very good case study to be applied to all of these and multiple theories. Like, she was my main case study that I focused on last week, because her trial and how she was represented is so interesting, because there were so many different components. But if we're going to talk about like the sad categorization, I can apply it to Lucy Letby's case as well, because a note was found in her home after she was arrested where she was expressing remorse and highlighting traits of anxiety and mental illness. With, these are the quotes from the note: overwhelming fear, I panic, I'll never have children or marry, I'll never know what it's like to have a family, I haven't done anything wrong, I feel very alone and scared. And then later on she's saying, I am evil, and things like that. So that would have put her, that note being released into the headlines, put her in the sad categorization as well, because of this overwhelming anxiety and fear and loneliness that she was feeling relates to the mental illness side of things, where they, female violent offenders can be victimized due to being a victim of their mental and medical illness. And for Eileen Wuornos, she experienced a lot of abuse from her grandparents who adopted her. She had a very horrible upbringing, that her mother abandoned her when she was young, like a toddler. She never met her biological father. She allegedly experienced a lot of sexual abuse. She had an unwanted pregnancy, whom she said came from her grandfather's friend. So there is a lot that happened in her past that the media could have played on to victimize her in order to grant leniency and put her in the sad categorization of them. So that is sort of the kind of, I would say, categorizations of the Mad, Bad, or Sad and the case studies that they can kind of be directly applied to. A lot of them just, I feel, it's interesting applying to them, but I do think that it does take away from the idea that women can have autonomy and agency over choosing to be violent or choosing to kill someone. And again, I'm not advocating at all for women to be killing or anything like that, but it's this double standard that men have that agency and autonomy given to them. There's no justification or portrayal to trying to keep them as far from the stereotypes as possible to justify their actions, whereas for women, so much effort goes into making them as unfeminine as possible, because God forbid someone that is female or has what is considered a lot of femininity in quotation marks could ever do something that is so polarizing to the empathetic and loving and gentle nature that is associated to them. So I do think it's interesting that there is this theory going around, and I'm pretty sure it's a fairly kind of recent theory. I want to say like 2015 was the paper that I based. So I did this in my module, Women and Crime, in my second year, and it was based off of a 2015 paper that was looking into the portrayal of female violence through the Mad, Bad, and Sad category. I think I'm going to take a break and play some music now, because I feel like I have just unloaded a load of information right out, but I'll come back after a couple of songs. I think I'm going to play this song that is kind of fitting, I would say, to the theme. It's called Dressed for a Funeral. It's not a sad song. It's a very upbeat song, actually. But it's called Dressed for a Funeral by the band The Backfires. And I recently actually discovered them on TikTok, I want to say. And they're made up of individuals from both the USA and the UK, but are based in New York City at the moment. And they kind of describe themselves as from both sides of the Atlantic, which I thought was quite funny. I'm going to play Dressed for a Funeral by The Backfires off of their album This Is Not an Exit. And then I'm going to play the song East Coast Summers by Caleb Cohen, another American artist, and that's a single. And then after that, I'll play another single called How Long, How Low by Chance Pena and Hade, and that is a Texas artist. So, yeah, I hope you guys all enjoy these songs, and I will catch you right when they're done.
Dress for bedroom coax, it reminds me of home. Got Springsteen singing on the radio. Red cups on rooftops, only thing that I've ever known. Girl, it's nothing like you've ever seen. From the neon lights to the evergreen, it might rain for a minute, but you'll learn how to dance through the storm. Laying by your side in late July, baby, take my hand. I'll tell you why we love those East Coast summers. Nipping on the run, now the beachfront, nights, fireflies and thunderstorms. Won't you kiss me, darling? Tell me that you're gonna stay. Yeah. And you're a West Coast girl, but your heart is in the ocean, stay. Well, these northern skies and long parades are all you need. And on a Saturday, you'll be red hot asphalt, bonfires and lemonade. Laying by your side in late July, babe, you take my hand. I'll tell you why we love those East Coast summers. Living on the run, not a beach fun, not fireflies and thunderstorms. Darling, tell me that you're gonna stay. Oh, no. Give me those East Coast summers, Maryland to Maine. Not the seaside stoners dancing in the rain. With your cheeks so sunburned, I can see you miles away. Yeah. And you're a West Coast girl, but your heart is in the ocean state. These nights run long, the seaside sprays, and this little town starts to celebrate. Sapphire sailboats drifting down Atlantic waves. And it's nothing like that Venice breeze or silver screens in West LA. So take my hand, girl, come with me. I'll show you why you want to stay in those East Coast summers. Darling, tell me that you're gonna stay. Girl, but your heart is in the ocean state.
break. All I know is I can't carry this no more. So how long, how low?
Welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Rebecca and I'm going to be your host for about the next 8 minutes before Bitcoova takes over the airwaves for the next 2 hours from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And I have just been talking a bit about the media representations and portrayals of violent female offenders, particularly female serial killers and women who kill, and how it kind of removes any agency or autonomy by representing them as having this justification as to why they killed, whether it's because they have a mental medical illness, or whether they're victimized, or whether they're demonized through the mad, bad, or sad categories. And I also just wanted to look a bit more on Aileen Wuornos for the last few minutes on how there is a portrayal of women who kill as being more masculine to further polarize them away from femininity, because their actions are typically considered more masculine, with them being aggressive and volatile rather than kind, empathetic, and calm, which are the typical traits of femininity. And this is supported by the traditional patriarchal concept that power is obtained through violence. And since women are considered and expected to be weaker and more submissive from their femininity, and men will typically hold more power than women in society, violent women are then associated with more with masculinity. And Aileen Wuornos, again, is a great case study to be applied. She can be applied to so many theoretical concepts and analyses on female serial killers and female violence. She was notoriously dubbed the first female serial killer, which is actually false, but anyway, she has been like portrayed in a number of different ways, both by the media and herself in her trial, like I said previously, with the face work that she conducted. But she was overall categorized as being more masculine than feminine, and that was kind of a running theme the whole time. And this was due to her appearance, because she wore clothes that were associated with truckers and bikers, and this enforced her masculine physical appearance, in addition to her being involved in a lesbian relationship. And at the time of her crime in the 1970s, LGBTQ rights were still seeking recognition and equality. It was not accepted nearly to what it is today, and even today there are still some drawbacks. But the perception that lesbianism was abnormal and masculine with her appearance seemed very butch, and really drastically enforced this idea that women who kill are not feminine at all. And it outwardly did not fit with traditional systemic stereotypes of femininity and women and nuclear family ideology and all things like that. So that was kind of my last couple of points. I wanted to just delve a bit more in Aileen Wuornos. I know I did a whole episode dedicated to her last week, but she's just such an interesting case study. There's just so much to talk about with her and so many analyses. But yeah, I hope you guys all enjoyed tonight's episode. I know it was another kind of dark one. It was a part two to last week's one. Next week will definitely be a lot more lighthearted and a much, I would say, enjoyable topic. But I hope you guys still enjoyed tonight's show. Again, stay tuned for Bitcoova coming up in the next 4 minutes. And tune in again next week from 7 to 8 p.m. to hear another sociologic topic with just me again, Rebecca. Killen is not going to be back, as she is, I believe, in Guatemala currently, probably touching some grass, as she always likes to say. And I'm going to leave you with the song Beautiful Day by the American band U2. I just think it's a really fitting way to finish tonight's episode after not the most lighthearted of topics. So yeah, I hope you all have a good rest of your week, and I'll see you next week.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no
stuff.